January 14th. This evening you can look high in the south when darkness falls for a bright reddish light near the moon. That'll be the planet Mars. Last year was a wonderful year to observe Mars. In September, the red planet was closer to our world than it had been since 1971. This year things will be different. Mars will spend most of this year looking very dim and far away, but still interesting and fun to watch as it moves rapidly in front of the background stars. The red planet is looking fainter to us because we're now rushing ahead of it in our smaller orbit around the sun. Its motion in front of the stars is different this year for that same reason. Throughout last fall, Mars appeared in front of the stars of the constellation Pisces. It wasn't moving very fast in front of the stars because Earth and Mars were on the same side of the sun, moving more or less neck and neck in the race of the planets. Well, now Earth has moved far enough ahead of Mars that the red planet appears to shift in front of the stars. This month, it'll move out from in front of Pisces into the constellation next door, Aries. It'll appear in front of Taurus by early March, then Gemini, Cancer, and Leo, before disappearing in the sun's glare in August. So look for Mars tonight, a reddish light in the sky near the moon. And by the way, when you see it, remember that the Soviet Phobos mission, sent to explore Mars' innermost moon, will arrive in the vicinity of that distant light around the end of this month. Our program is Stardate. Our writer and our producer is Deborah Bird. Stardate and Stardate Magazine are productions of the MacDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin. And for the MacDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
Number is 2. Please make a note of it. The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Screen damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Do not push a key in 3 seconds. You will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
And it's 10 minutes after 10 o'clock. Program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you up until midnight. A very good evening on this 14th day of January, 1989. And, of course, the first thing we usually do is see what's doing outside. 4 degrees Celsius, 39 on the Fahrenheit scale. A bit warm for this time of year, but that's just the way it is sometimes. Our telephone number is 632-6901. Area code 516. And today the topic is smoking, something that has come up quite a few times over the last year or so, and something that no doubt will come up in years, months to come. And we'll go over some of the news that has been talking about smoking, and Jim will be here to fill us in on his, well, whatever he has to say on the subject, I guess. I don't know what the word is. But before we do anything, we are going to take a look at the news, which is a special kind of a thing for me, because I had to perform mouth-to-mouth on the teletype machine to get the thing to spit out just a little bit of news. And we got it to work for about, 15 minutes, and then the thing died again. So, fortunately, in that 15 minutes, we got a newscast. So, without any further ado, arrests were made by the hundreds today in what may be a preview of what will happen in 8 days on the 16th anniversary of legalized abortion. That's right. Women's clinics in New York and New Orleans were blocked today by hundreds of abortion opponents. The protest ended with 565 arrests in New York and about 72 in New Orleans. I heard something on the order of 700 in New York. And in Cincinnati, about 300 people braved freezing rain to attend an anti-abortion rally. Pretty neat, huh? I think it's pretty neat when 700 people get arrested for taking a stand on anything, even if it's something I don't agree with. It's neat to see that kind of thing go on. 700 people. And that's only in New York. A whole bunch more. Yes, Jim. Go ahead. You have something to say? Say it.
No, actually, I wanted to look at something on the Wire copy because I'm filing some other stuff.
Oh, I'm reading the Wire copy.
I know. It's just
kind of an inconvenient time to ask me to look at something.
Well, no, see, that was the point. That's why I waved my hands at you deferentially, meaning that you could just go on, and I was just going to look over your shoulder at something on the Wire
copy. How do you expect me to read while you're looking over my... Look, go ahead. Take it.
Well,
take
okay.
My news. I don't care.
Gee.
Find something else to talk about.
Gee, I had hoped to avoid Let's such see. A contretemps, but oh well. Here you go.
Any station memos I can read that are lying around?
I think there's some memo about not looking over people's shoulders while they're reading Wire copy. I'm not sure.
It's an unwritten rule. Mm. One that apparently you have not been briefed in.
Well, I guess I didn't read it because someone else was looking at it, and I didn't want to look over their shoulder to read it. Oh, well.
Nothing but a line of people looking over each other's shoulders at the one piece of news copy we've gotten all day long.
No, I have some other news copy in there also.
It hasn't come over recently, has it? It's like
yes,
a couple days old.
Yes, it did. No, it came over very briefly, a little bit before 10.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I think this is it, because I pulled
Well,
this
I think what you have there is what's relevant. I mean, what I have is not specifically
well,
something
lotto numbers
read,
and
so.
Things like that, right?
Something like that.
College basketball scores, things nobody
something
cares
like
about.
Oh, no, we care about college basketball.
No, we don't.
Especially Patriots basketball.
We're anti-patriot. No, actually, the Stony Brook Patriots.
Patriots.
Right, okay. We care about the Stony Brook Patriots.
All the Stony Brook teams we care about.
But we don't care about any other teams. So since you need another team to play with, you know, it doesn't... We just care about the Stony Brook Patriots, you know. We don't care about any other team. So it makes the whole thing kind of pointless. Shall we continue with the news?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, Jim, what do you... let me call you back. What do you think of 700 people being arrested in New York City? You think that's kind of neat? I think it's kind of neat.
Well, it's certainly... it's certainly significant in the... well, it depends on what you mean by neat.
I just think it's neat to see 700 people take a stand. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with their stand, but I'm saying it's just kind of neat to see them actually take the risk.
Of it.
Right.
Yes, it is. It is a rather imposing number when you think about
now,
it.
Now, if everybody who agreed... On something did that, we'd have a lot more people being arrested, obviously, but we might be able to change things.
That's true. As a matter of fact, if we had so many people getting arrested that just about everybody was arrested, I guess one of the few ways you could protest relating to arrest would be to get yourself released from jail.
That would be something.
As a way of protesting something.
That would be something.
I think I've been inhaling too much Lysol.
Why don't you go outside and get some air?
I'm sorry. Yeah, you see, I should explain, and people probably have heard on the air, my voice is a little nasal. I have a cold, and so I've been spraying all the equipment.
You sprayed all of the telephones
in
the studio with
Lysol. To avoid the rhinovirus.
I don't think these Rome phones can handle Lysol spray.
No.
I don't think they can't handle human breath.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I don't know. The place is really, like, smelling of Lysol now. It's quite a smell. Thank you for bringing that to us, Jim.
Certainly. I got to spread the microphone I just spoke on.
Oh boy. Well, you want to do that now?
Should
go ahead.
I do it on the air?
Yeah, I don't
okay.
think there's any FCC law against spraying
okay.
it. You might electrocute yourself. I don't know about that.
Wow, this is probably a first, disinfecting a microphone
okay.
live.
I'm going to spray the microphone with Lysol.
Here we go. This combines all the best dramatic aspects.
You're lighting up the switchboard like a Christmas
I can
tree
imagine.
With these antics.
This combines all the dramatic aspects of a TV show like Saint Elsewhere and a movie like Talk Radio, you see.
Yeah.
Combining both the
Midnight Caller, all that kind of thing.
Media.
Did you see Talk Radio?
Aspect. No, I haven't seen it yet. I intend to, though.
I haven't seen it either.
I intend to, but here goes.
All right. Oh, listen to that. That's quite a sound effect. Do that again.
Sure.
Oh, that's really nice. Now, that mic is disinfected.
Yep.
Anything else needs disinfecting around here?
Oh, I think some of my thoughts.
Okay, well, you take care of those in the other room, then.
Yeah, I better do that.
Let's try to continue with the news, and we'll get to some calls. Again, the topic is smoking. We haven't really talked anything about smoking yet, but we will. But call prepared to talk about smoking. No offense to the people who may be on the line already, but I don't want to hear people saying, I want to say hi to my friend over here and my friend over there, and I want to do this and do that, you know, and saying things that don't really make much sense. Transfer you right over to the psych ward. They're open now on Saturday nights. Asked them to make extra hours for you guys, and they're only too willing to do that. So call up and talk about, you know, whatever is on. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of smoking? Do you smoke cigarettes? Do you smoke anything else? Do you hate people that smoke cigarettes? You know, that kind of thing. Are you smoking now? Well, let's continue with the news, and we'll get into that. At least two soldiers and two civilians are injured following two bombings. A lot of twos in that story. In Northern Ireland tonight, the bombs exploded within 45 minutes of each other in Belfast and Londonderry, as British Army patrols were nearby. There's been no claim of responsibility. It's one thing that they could certainly use a bit of over there. The body of one of two Americans missing in the 1986 U.S. raid on Libya is now at an airbase in Spain. Medical experts have identified the remains as those of Air Force Major Fernando Rivas Dominici, after Libya initially said they belonged to the other missing American. Nice going, Libya. Two people, and you get it wrong. Rivas Dominici's family is demanding that an autopsy be done after the body is flown to the U.S. Monday to make sure the ID is correct and to determine the cause of death. West Germany's government says there's no proof of laws being broken by West German companies in Libya. It is acknowledging that U.S. documents link some of the companies to what the Reagan administration charges is a Libyan chemical weapons plant. The Bonn government is not identifying the companies. But we will if we get the names of them. Saturdays will never seem the same, were the words today from President Reagan. Well, that's right. Today marked Reagan's 331st and final Saturday radio address. My heavens. What's going on there? I hear a sudden burst of audio. Oh, well. The president, whose first job was as a radio sportscaster, repeated some thoughts from Wednesday's farewell address, saying, "It's been a privilege to serve." That's simply amazing. As is traditional on this program, we try to call the president, but he's always busy. He never wants to talk to us.
Maybe he'll be available for subsequent installments of Brain Damage, since he'll not have much to do after next week.
I guess so, but then again, it's going to be a lot more expensive to call him, too.
Well, maybe he can call us.
Yeah, that's the least he can do. He probably has the money, too.
Well, he's going to get if nothing else, he's going to have a $100,000 a year pension for the rest of his life.
I'll tell you, that's enough for me. Okay,
yeah, me
so,
too.
I don't know, maybe we'll get to that later.
I'd call Brain Damage using my own money if I had a $100,000 a year pension for the rest of my life.
Oh, I appreciate hearing that.
Oh, sure. Even if you didn't want to hear from me, I'd call just to have you say hello and say, "I'm sorry, I can't talk to you now," and hang up on me. I wouldn't mind at all.
We're going to try it one more time.
Sure.
You know, I think that typifies the entire Reagan administration. This is the sound of the Reagan administration. Shocking.
Sounding busy. Not necessarily being busy, but sounding busy.
That could be the sound of their rings. Who knows? You can make a ring sound like that.
Yeah.
It's just a tone generator.
Sure.
That's all it is. You can make a ring sound like anything you want.
What a way to disorient somebody, though. Imagine making that be the sound of a ring and the current sound of a ring sound of the busy signal.
It is.
Think of how deconditioned people would have to become if we switched around.
You know, I'll tell you something. You want to hear a good busy signal?
Sure.
I'll just to digress for one moment here. This is the best busy signal I've ever heard. Going through. Listen to that.
Oh, yes. Sounds portentous.
Now, that sounds kind of like a dial tone, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It sounds like an intermittent version of the continuous sound that a dial tone is made up of.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Mm.
That's exactly what it is. But I'll tell you, my favorite belongs to a place right here on Long Island called Fisher's Island.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard Fisher's Island?
Oh, yes.
It's actually got a zip code of Connecticut, but it's located in New York.
Really?
Closer to Connecticut, yes.
And it has a Connecticut zip code.
Yes, it does, but a Long Island area code.
Interesting.
And this is a long-distance call, believe it or not, even though it's in the same area code as us. But listen to this fast busy. Listen to all that noise. That's far away. It's going a long distance. It's going around New York City.
Right up. My gosh.
Now, that's old, ancient history you're hearing there.
Yes.
That's about as old as you get.
Very interesting.
You hear a busy signal or a reorder like that, and you know you're talking to something from the past.
I'll say. You know what that reminds me of?
What's that?
Speaking of the past also.
I don't think they can even dial calls without operator assistance.
Really?
Yeah.
How? By the way, do you know about how far that is east of Stony Brook?
No, I don't know exactly how far. I would say about 40 or 50 miles probably. But
it's in the Sound,
the
right?
The only way to get there is to go up to Connecticut, up to New London, I think, and take a ferry from there to Fisher's Island. Or you can fly, too.
Interesting. You know, it reminds me of Block Island, which I was trying to figure out where it was, and I mean, I had an idea where it was. And I forgot that it was part of Rhode Island, but I thought it was either part of the state of Connecticut or part of Long Island, part of the state of New York.
Is that part of Long Island?
No, I thought so,
too. That's the one that's right off Long Island that they do animal experiments on.
You mean Fire Island?
No, not Fire Island. There's one right to the east of Long Island. They do all kinds of animal research.
Let me see. Oh, wow.
I thought that was Block Island.
It might be, but it's probably isn't. Well, it depends on how close.
Plum Island?
No, maybe.
There's something like that.
Maybe.
I don't know how we got into this, but we really should get back to the
news and
finish this off.
We
here.
Should.
Okay, after Dan Quayle was elected elected vice president, Indiana Republican Congressman Dan Coats was tapped for his Senate seat. Now comes the more complicated process of filling the House seat Coats left. Republican Dan Heath and Democrat Jill Long were nominated by their respective parties today and will face off in a special election March 28th. Oh, no, a federal election on March 28th, not a federal election March. A special election March.
Wow.
Whatever the hell.
That would be impressive, wouldn't it?
Yeah. There
imagine having to march off to elections.
That would
be scary.
There had been plans to mark Monday, Martin Luther King Day, with a ceremony at the Memphis Motel, where he was assassinated nearly 21 years ago. Promoters wanted to stage a groundbreaking ceremony at the Lorraine Motel, which is earmarked to become the centerpiece of a civil rights museum. But delays in getting the work started have now pushed that back to later this month. And there have been many incidents over the past year of racial attacks carried out around the country by white supremacists known as skinheads. But in Minneapolis this weekend, there was a gathering of skinheads from a different school of thought. Dozens of Midwestern youths with shaved heads, tattoos, and flight jackets are meeting, marching, and partying, all with the goal of fighting the racism and violence espoused by rival skinheads. And that's a good sign. You can't judge a man by the amount of hair on his head or lack thereof, or anything like that.
You know what's intriguing about that?
What's that?
Going back, let's say, to the 60s, for some time, a person...
A magazine!
This is the White House press office for Saturday, January 14th. Today, we have the president's final Saturday radio address. The address is 5 minutes long and begins on my count.
This is special.
3, 2, 1.
Go ahead.
My fellow Americans, over the years I've greatly enjoyed this opportunity to get together with you and report on the week's events here in Washington. But next week, after witnessing the inauguration of George Bush as president, Nancy and I'll head back to the ranch. We go with full hearts, with best wishes for George and Barbara, and with gratitude to all of you. It's been a privilege to serve the people and the nation we've always loved and love so much today. It's difficult, of course, to put all the events of 8 busy, tumultuous years in perspective. In fact, that's best left to the impartial judgment of history. But as I look back over these Saturday talks, I can't help but think about how often, at moments of accomplishment and triumph, as well as crisis and heartbreak, we came together in this way. A president giving his accounting to those under our system of government to whom he is accountable. We've shared a great deal together. For me, it's been a special relationship. Believe me, Saturdays will never seem the same. I'll miss you. But you know, somehow messages of farewell, leave-taking, and nostalgia don't quite capture my mood today. Don't get me wrong. We've had great years and done much together. The economy is booming. Long-festering social problems like drugs, crime, and a decline in our educational standards are being dealt with. And for the first time in the post-war era, the Soviet menace shows some signs of relenting. This last development is, of course, so heartening to those of us who've lived through all the brooding terrors of the post-war era. We're prayerful and hopeful. Hopeful. hopeful that the next generation of Americans will not have to contend, as we did, with the nightmares of nuclear terror and totalitarian expansionism. You know, shortly after World War II and the struggle against Nazi Germany, Winston Churchill looked with grave concern and sadness at a world that evolved so quickly, as he put it, from triumph and tragedy. But then, as he began to detect the vigor and resolve of America against the Soviet menace and for freedom in Europe and everywhere in the world, a vigor and resolve shared equally by an American president and an American Congress of different political parties, he grew hopeful and grateful for this unselfish bipartisan unity. There's a story I want to tell you today about a meeting Churchill had with a group of American journalists in 1952, at a time when all the troubles of the Cold War, including the hardship of morally and militarily rearming the West, were keenly felt. His friend and physician, Lord Moran, recorded Churchill's appraisal of American leadership. "What other nation in history," Churchill asked, "when it became supremely powerful, has had no thought of territorial aggrandizement, no ambition but to use its resources for the good of the world? I marvel at America's altruism, her sublime disinterestedness. All at once I realized," Lord Moran wrote, "Winston was in tears. His eyes were red, his voice faltered, he was deeply moved." Well, generous words, honest emotion from a great world leader. And now, more than a quarter century later, as the decade of the 80s comes to a close, there is hope that the generosity and resolve that Churchill saw in the American people is at last paying an historic dividend. The possibility of a new time in human history, when all the problems that so haunted the post-war world give way to peace and expansion of freedom. So you can see why, to me, the story of these last 8 years and this presidency goes far beyond any personal concerns. It is a continuation, really, of a far larger story. A story of a people and a cause. A cause that from our earliest beginnings has defined us as a nation and given purpose to our national existence. The hope of human freedom, the quest for it, the achievement of it, is the American saga. And I've often recalled one group of early settlers making a treacherous crossing of the Atlantic on a small ship when their leader, a minister, noted that perhaps their venture would fail and they would become a byword, a footnote to history. But perhaps, too, with God's help, they might also found a new world, a city upon a hill, a light under the nations. Those words and that destiny beckon to us still. Whether we seek it or not, whether we like it or not, we Americans are keepers of the miracle. We are asked to be guardians of a place to come to, a place to start again, a place to live in the dignity God meant for his children. May it ever be so. Thanks for listening. God bless you.
This is the White House press office.
Wow. Listen to all that bad sound.
Yeah, that's the race noise on the tape cartridge there.
Let's see if it does anything else. That's the remnants of something else that was recorded there. Oh, and it just queued up and hung up on us.
Yeah, I shouldn't say erased noise. I mean, you're right, the remnants a badly erased or pretty poorly erased cartridge.
We have David Allen with us. David, are you there?
Hey, Eric. It sounds like it's going to be a really hot show.
I'm glad to hear you say that. We just listened to our leader, Mr. Reagan, give his last farewell address.
Isn't it also his first farewell address?
I guess so, yeah. It's one way of looking. Jim, I can't help but notice it's an awfully loud noise coming from your studio.
You're right.
What is that noise coming from? Okay, that's much better.
It's my microphone.
The microphone's making that much noise?
Apparently. Let me
see. Nothing else turned up
maybe
in
there? There's something else.
Oh, Jim, could you pick up the phone?
Which one?
The
one that Dave is on?
Office 3, yes.
Okay.
Our number, by the way, for other listeners is 632-6901. That was a very rare type of a thing to get through on the call there. Usually on the call, Reagan, he's busy, but I guess he's not so busy anymore. Jim, are you anywhere? Jim seems to be gone completely.
I think his microphone exploded.
Jim, no, you can't pick up the phone like that. You have to pick up the phone on the speaker. Now you're going to have to spray that phone, Jim. Jim, by the way, is going around spraying all the phones with Lysol because he has a cold.
But you see, you said Office 3, there's somebody else on there. I thought David was on.
No. You picked up the phone and automatically picked up the first line that was ringing over there.
Oh, but didn't you want Office 3?
No, you picked up Studio 1, not Office 3.
Oh, my.
See, by picking up the receiver, you picked up the wrong person.
Office 3 was
ringing.
You have to press the button,
yes,
Office 3,
yes,
and go on
right.
Speakerphone.
I should know. I'm sorry.
You can pick up the phone after that if you must.
Now, you just hung up on someone that was calling in.
They'll call back.
Did they say they would?
I'm sure they will.
I hope they weren't mad, because that's a...
No, they weren't.
They were ringing for a good long time there.
They're calling back.
Well, that might be somebody else.
Right.
That
well,
might be somebody
that's
else.
True.
They might be
They'd
locked
be smoking
up.
Mad.
Well, we are talking about smoking tonight.
smoking mad.
Well, let me ask David. Are you smoking now?
Am I smoking now? No, I'm not.
Oh, that's a coincidence. I'm not either, and I don't believe Jim is. Jim, are you smoking?
He's smoldering.
No, it's not smoldering.
No.
Okay, because I was going to say, if you are, you should be careful with that Lysol can.
Now, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, you're right about that, yeah.
And I shouldn't hang around any incinerators either.
Now, David, can you hear Jim?
No.
No, you can't. Jim, you have to push that button down.
Okay. Well, you see, I was trying... you're
pick
right.
Pick up the receiver.
I haven't done that. I'm just trying to determine the source of this buzzing. Can you hear? Still hear it?
Yes, I believe I can. I don't know what the source is.
Maybe it's in the...
The only thing in program is the microphone, eh?
Let me see.
Oh, that sounds much better, whatever you just did.
Yeah, when I turn on the microphone in here...
Jim?
Yes. Oh, well, okay.
I can hear you.
I want Office 3.
All you have to do is push down
press
that
speaker.
Phone. Yeah. And then, we'll hear you over the
Hi.
Phone.
How's that?
Oh, much better. Now, we don't hear the hum at all because you're on the phone.
Right.
I don't know what that is.
A little feedback. Okay.
We don't need that, Jim.
We don't.
what I'd like to do here is go over the results of this survey from the Centers for Disease Control, and maybe we can see if that correlates with what we experience in our real lives. Based on 1987 data, 32% of all men smoke, and 27% of all women smoke. Now... Here's where it gets kind of confusing. 36%, I don't know if this is 36% of the 32% or the 27% or 36% in total, I don't know. But 36% are not high school graduates, 33% are high school graduates, 26% have some college experience, I'm not quite sure what that means, and 16% are college graduates. And then we have 34% are black, 29% are white.
Derek?
Yeah.
That totals way over 100 there.
Well, you see, that's why I'm very confused with this, because I don't deal with this kind of thing. The only thing I understood really was 32% of all men and 27% of women. I don't know how the rest of it breaks down. I'm just reading what's in front of me here.
You think this might be new math?
It's something I'm not quite acquainted with. But what it does say is that people who aren't high school graduates smoke a lot. I don't know why that is, but for some reason, when you become a college graduate, the chances of you smoking is less than half than if you're not a high school graduate. And being a high school graduate and having some college experience puts you somewhere in the middle. Now, I don't know. I don't remember learning in college that smoking was bad. I remember learning that in elementary school.
Maybe because the people who smoke in college have been smoking for so long, by the time they finish college, the ones who smoke die.
Oh.
And the ones who don't smoke are still alive.
Now, that's a very interesting point. That's a very, very interesting point here. You know, I don't know if anybody remembers. It's only a year ago that the Long Island Railroad had a ban on smoking. Everyone's gotten used to it. There was such a big clamor at the beginning when they started this thing. But, Jim, you ride the trains, right? Jim? Where's Jim?
That was April 13th, wasn't
it?
There I am.
Yeah, Jim,
here we are.
Are you having a problem with the phone, Jim?
Myself reorganized in here
okay.
with the microphone. I'm sorry. Yes, I ride the train.
Well, now, you've noticed that there are no more smokers on the train, you know?
Yes.
Has that improved things for you?
Well, it's interesting that you ask about my feeling towards smoking. Now, I've never smoked.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, I even have an asthmatic condition, which is well under control, but it is there just the same, and of course that's a condition that can be aggravated by smoking.
Uh-huh.
And yet, over the years, even though I never got into smoking, I really, and I don't wish any health problems on people who do smoke, I, however, don't feel any particular animosity towards people who smoke, in the sense of animosity. I don't have any animosity towards them in general. It's their business to do what they want to do, but I think they'd probably be better off not doing it. But I know it's hard, of course, to quit. But as far as my own personal disturbance, by, let's say, the smell or the smoke or whatever, it's never really bothered me. So, except maybe if I walked in to a train smoking car that was absolutely filled with smokers, but even that I could tolerate.
It is disgusting, though, when you think of it. I mean, to be able to have to walk through a car where just about everybody in there is smoking. I know the conductors were the leaders as far as the complainers.
Well, I wouldn't blame them, and I don't blame people who do complain about it. It's just that my own personal feeling, it never really bothered me much. But, of course, I do have the advantage, as many people do, I would say, who ride the trains now, the Long Island Railroad, that there is more seats potentially available. There are more seats potentially available in the non-smoking cars, since every car is a non-smoking car now. And in the in the old days, every other car, I think, was a smoking car.
Uh-huh.
Then they just made one or two cars per train a smoking car, but that's still provided a seating problem because people who were bothered by the smoke would not want to sit in either of those two cars, and there would sometimes be apparently congestion in the non-smoking cars. So removing all smoking cars has given potentially some more seats on the train. So I guess I have an advantage, as do other riders that way. What I notice is a lot of people, or a fair number of people who are smokers, taking advantage of some minutes before a train pulls out of a station.
Oh, God, yes.
To stand by the station, or just off the train on the station platform and smoke. And again, I guess they'd be better off not smoking, but I don't blame them for trying to get some drags in, because what I do notice is a rather general compliance with the law. Nobody seems to be flouting.
No, that's true.
Non-smoking law, and I think there was a lot of concern that there was going to be all kinds of insurrection, but that hasn't happened.
Now, do you think of these people as addicts?
Well, I suppose some of them are.
I mean, they say nicotine is as addictive as cocaine.
Well, I suppose some of them are addicts, but I guess, and I'm sure you and Dave would join me in not looking down on people who are addicts, but that it's just it's a medical condition, I guess both a physical and a psychological condition that deserves attention. I guess it's not so much a moral question. Although there are those that argue that they are polluting the air around them for non-smokers, so there might be some question there. But as far as themselves as people, I would say most of them that are heavily into smoking are addicted, but I don't really blame them, because I would think that many of them probably didn't realize how addictive it could become, and they're probably, many of them I think probably want to quit very badly, at least cut down, and
uh-huh.
Probably quit altogether. But I would think that it's so intense an addiction, both physical and psychological, because it can become a way of channeling certain anxiety or nervousness into the act of smoking from a psychological standpoint. And I guess to remove that from somebody, not only remove the cigarette from somebody, not only removes the physical relief of the smoking, but the mental relief, it must take an awful lot of discipline and work and a lot of aggravation to be able to cut down. So if I can't empathize exactly, not being a smoker, I can certainly sympathize with people. And
well, I'd like to hear from some folks that do smoke, because obviously there is another side to this whole thing. Jim has a full-page advertisement in there that was in the Times this week from a tobacco company. I've got all kinds of statistics in here.
So excuse me for a moment. I'm going to run into the other studio where there's a non-buzzing mic so that when I have to read this, it'll sound clearer.
Okay, you run into that. Don't forget to push the button on the phone so that you don't leave it off hook.
Will do.
And,
thank you.
Okay, is David still there?
Yes, I'm here. I have a question. I'd like to know if any callers have ever used any of the quit smoking programs advertised on television, such as the cigarette program, you know, advertised on late night television with those 50-minute advertisements. and if these programs actually work and what they consist of.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's certainly an interesting aspect to all of this.
And I'd like to know where the frogs fit in.
The frogs? What
frogs?
Yeah,
if you ever notice, people wear these little buttons that have a picture of a frog, and it says, "Kiss me, I don't smoke."
Huh. That's interesting. I never saw that.
Now, I once heard that people used to smoke...
Wait a minute. Whoa. You kiss a frog, and it turns into a prince. Could that have something to do with it?
Well, I thought it might have to do with people used to smoke toad skins for hallucinogenic effects.
I see. Well, that's...
That has anything to do with it.
I don't think so. Well, let me read a couple of statistics here, then we'll go to some calls. Let me know if you agree with this, if it sounds like it makes sense to you. Smoking is responsible...
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Smoking is responsible for more than one of every six deaths in the United States. One out of every six. That's,
I don't agree.
You think it's more or less?
I think it's less.
Okay, well, I mean, you are disagreeing with the Surgeon General of the United States, by the way. And we do have him on the other line, and he will be refuting your statements.
Double dare.
Actually, no, we don't have him on the other line. We probably could get him if we wanted to, but no point embarrassing everyone. Okay, children, especially girls, are smoking at younger ages. Smoking among high school seniors, which had been declining for years, leveled off from 1980 through 1987. One quarter of high school seniors who have ever smoked had their first cigarette by the sixth grade and half by the eighth grade. There is a growing consensus that smoking prevention education needs to begin in elementary school. What do you think of that?
I believe that smoker's ed should start as early as first grade.
Uh-huh.
If you program the children at a young age to realize how bad and evil smoking is, maybe they'll never pick up a cigarette.
Uh-huh. Now, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but have you smoked a cigarette?
Well, quite candidly, I can say, yes, I have smoked a cigarette.
Uh-huh. And at what age did you smoke your first?
When I was nine.
Okay. Nine. Well, actually, you know, I think that's about when I smoked my first and maybe only cigarette. You know, I've smoked maybe one or two cigarettes in my entire life. And a couple of cigars. Smoked a couple of cigars that were called Eric cigars, and there was a cherry flavor. They're about the most disgusting thing I can ever remember having. Other than that, there aren't many things I've smoked, so, yeah, I'm not very experienced in this whole deal. But do you think many nine-year-olds are smoking today?
No. I smoked that cigarette at a wedding.
Uh-huh, at a wedding? Well, you mean your parents were there and everything?
My mother actually let me have the cigarette.
Oh, my goodness.
Which reminds me of a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon.
Okay.
Whereby Calvin says, "Mom, I'm going to start to smoke." And his mom says, "Okay, your grandfather left his cigarettes here. You can take them outside. I don't want you smoking them in the house." And he goes outside, and he lights up the cigarette with Hobbes, and he takes a big puff on the cigarette.
Yeah.
And he starts to cough, hardly, okay. And he turns green, and I don't remember the punchline there. But he was smoking.
Wow. That's really, really fun. Excuse me if I sound disoriented. I'm trying to get... Jim, why don't you say something in the other room? I guess Jim can't hear me. We're in another studio now, and... Jim seems completely... yell or something, or say something. I think I hear you, Jim. Jim? Whoa, Jim, I think I hear you, Jim. Just say something.
Hello?
Ah, perfect.
Hi.
Okay, now just find the microphone that's working, and we can carry on. Just keep hitting it with your hand until you get to the right one. You can't hear me? Don't the headphones
work? No, I can hear you through the glass.
You can hear me through the... What about the headphones? Don't they work? Are the headphones still there? There's a little knob there, and you can probably hear me through there. Can you hear me now?
Here we go, yes.
Okay, now just hit the microphone until you get the one that is plugged in.
I should spray the one until I get the one that's plugged in.
Okay, I think I got you there. Okay, we got Jim.
Okay.
Now, Jim, I would advise you to press the button again. Oh, dear, we've lost David somehow. Let's go straight to the phone.
Well, let's see. This phone doesn't seem to be hooked into anything.
Well, now you don't have to press the button now since Dave's no longer on the line.
Oh, I see. I see why it's not hooked. It's removed.
Ah, Well, you don't have to hook it, so don't worry.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you speak into the microphone, you'll be fine.
That's a good idea.
Let's give out the number 632-6901. You'll get a busy signal, but if you call as soon as someone else hangs up, you'll get through.
Why was there squealing before?
There's feedback of some sort. I don't know how it works. Mm. I've been here a long time. I don't know how.
Maybe I should turn down these volume controls here?
Possibly. It won't really do any good for me, I don't think, but we'll see what happens. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, Eric, what's up?
You tell me. We're talking about smoking today.
This is JoJo again from the CB, just to fill you in there.
Okay, so are you a smoker?
Uh-uh.
Why not?
Why should I be? If I wanted to, fill my lungs with smoke, I could go, inhale a muffler or something.
Oh, that's certainly a good idea, one I'm sure that will catch on, but how old are you, JoJo?
15.
You're just at the right age to start smoking, you know. That's when most people begin the habit, I think. Don't you feel kind of left out?
No, not really.
What do you attribute that to?
Because I have a lot of friends that are non-smokers.
Yeah? Well, I mean, as little as 10 years ago, that attitude would have been considered uncool, you know?
Whatever, I don't know. 10 years ago, I was only 5, so I really couldn't tell you.
Uh-huh. Do a lot of your friends smoke?
I only have a few friends that smoke. Some people on my hockey team smoke, though.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
And are they any cooler for it?
I don't know, probably.
How about parents, older relatives, that kind of thing?
Yeah, my dad smokes right now, and he tried those cigarette programs. They don't work.
They don't work?
It's just a little tape that...
The tape just tells you all kinds of things that are going, like horrible things you're doing to yourself.
And it tells you to think about all this stuff and do all. It's really stupid.
Uh huh.
It's like a waste.
How much did he spend on that?
I think like $19.95.
Oh, but
he sent it back. Don't got his money.
You see, that's the other thing. People take advantage of the fear of smokers too. You know, there's all kinds of hoodwink operations out there designed to cash in on this crisis. I don't know, you know, I don't know how a habit like this gets started. I mean, who thought of ingesting smoke into your lungs and breathing it out again? It just seems like so disgusting to me.
I think it was the Indians. I'm not sure, though.
Well, I know they had peace pipes and things like that. I don't know. Can we blame them for all of it, though? I don't know.
If they did it with the kind of frequency with which it's done today. They may have known better than to have had a frequent, as frequent an intake of it. They have just been very infrequently for certain ceremonial purposes and such.
Yeah. Well, JoJo, thanks for calling. Don't start smoking then. And tell your friends in the CB to stay away from those things too, huh?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
I'll be hearing from Tommy again tonight.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
632-6901. Yes, go ahead, Jim.
I once spoke to a psychiatrist who told me that regarding hypnosis, which, you know, is used for smoking, and I guess works for some people. He said that it doesn't always work for everybody, that hypnosis itself, whether it's for smoking or other things, works sometimes, but sometimes does not work. And he told me that he himself knew the technique of hypnosis and could hypnotize himself, and when he wanted to quit smoking, he tried self-hypnosis. And it didn't work for him. He wasn't suggesting it doesn't work for everybody, but it didn't work for him, and so he tried another method, and he was able to stop. So I think that some of these methods of cutting down on smoking by hypnosis must work for some people, but for others, it just isn't the thing. There's some other method that's needed.
Take a listen to this. The number of deaths attributed to smoking in 1985 was placed at 390,000. If you can imagine, 390,000 people, that's like the number of people that watched the New York Jets play their entire season. It's more than that, I think. I don't know. Placed at 390,000, an increase over past estimates that put the figure at closer to 300,000. The increased estimate was based on a new study by the American Cancer Society that found there was a higher relative risk of disease for women who smoke, and particularly in the case of lung cancer for men. The major smoking-related diseases are cancer, heart disease, respiratory disease, and other conditions like stomach ulcers. And pretty sobering statistics there. Since 1986, lung cancer has exceeded breast cancer as the leading cause of cancer death in women. the relative risk of lung cancer among smokers who are women has increased more than four times since the early 1960s. You know, I can't believe there are still people, and it's intolerable to me that there are still huge corporations that go around saying that it's not been proven that cigarette smoking has anything to do with lung cancer. You know, and I think you have this big, huge, full-page ad that was run in this week's New York Times.
Yes, I do.
You want to read part of it?
Sure.
Who was it put in by?
Sure. It was put in by the Tobacco Institute.
And where are they located?
They're located at 1875 I Street Northwest, Suite 800, Washington, D.C., 20006.
So this is an organization that represents all the tobacco companies, I guess.
I would imagine so.
I've seen ads by the Philip Morris company.
Yes.
All kinds of other agencies like that. Well, okay, they list a bunch of points there or something?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sure. Spectacular cashmere coat sale, 50 to 70. Oh, whoops. Turned to the wrong page by accident. Sorry. Oh, well. Okay, here we go. From the Tobacco Institute in the New York Times in a full-page ad dated January 11th this year. Enough is the title of the ad, and it says...
I think it's enough is enough, isn't it?
Well, at the beginning of the ad, it just says, enough is, and then there are three dots. That's the headline of the ad.
Fascinating. There. Okay.
And then the copy itself reads, enough is enough. Enough taxation. A national poll finds a majority of Americans do not support an increase in cigarette taxes. America's smokers already pay an extra $10 billion in cigarette taxes to fund government programs. And these taxes hit hardest those who can least afford them. We must find better sources for new revenue. Enough is enough. Enough legislation. A majority of Americans do not support smoking bans, according to a national poll. With governments considering new rules and regulations telling us what to do and when, anti-smoking laws are wasting valuable time and money in America's legislatures. Enough is enough. Enough control. Even off the job, some employers are ordering smokers not to light up. Reasonable people agree that no one should be able to dictate what legal activities we can or can't do in our own homes. Enough is enough. Enough censorship. Freedom of speech, including the freedom to advertise, is a right we must preserve. A ban on cigarette advertising is not supported by the majority of Americans, according to a national poll. Those who would ban cigarette ads to protect us from words and pictures ignore the First Amendment. Enough is enough. Enough harassment. Recently, a woman who was smoking in a smoking section of a restaurant was assaulted. Across the country, smokers are being subjected to physical and verbal attacks. No civilized person approves of such actions. Enough is enough. Enough discrimination. Singling out one group of people to pay more than a fair share of taxes, firing someone who smokes at home, or harassing someone in public is discrimination. Americans want and deserve better. Enough is enough. A national survey finds a majority of American adults do not support more restrictive or tougher anti-smoking measures. And the advertisement has a note at the bottom that says that poll data were obtained by a nationwide telephone poll of 1,500 adults conducted by Hamilton, Frederick, and Schneiders in December 1988.
Well, I think... They're rather extreme examples there. I've never actually seen someone get attacked in a restaurant.
No, I never have.
For smoking in the smoking section.
I never have. And I can see the point that perhaps all of the negative publicity about smoking and the militant anti-smoking measures that have been taken, or very assertive anti-smoking measures, such as through legislation and no advertising, may have conditioned people to be more... assertive in going against smokers, and it certainly doesn't excuse someone for assaulting a smoker, but I would agree with you that it's extreme, and perhaps it might raise the issue that not so much that there should not be negative advertising or negative information about smoking. There should continue to be a lot of negative publicity about smoking, I think,
mm-hmm.
but what there should be is perhaps some emphasis on sympathy for the smoker. So instead of simply thinking of the smoker as a vile individual, I think the likelihood is that most smokers are
are very likely essentially decent individuals, but they have a habit that's addictive, and they're not to be condescended to or hated, but need assistance and understanding.
Well, I mean, I can go with that. I can have sympathy for people that are obviously kind of sick as far as being involved with this habit that they can't break. It's obviously killing them, certainly in most cases. But I draw the line of sympathy for someone that pollutes the environment of their immediate neighbors, meaning people that they're sitting next to on a train or something like that. Why do other people have to breathe in the pollution that this person is exhaling,
something that has
already been proven to cause death in those people that aren't even smoking?
You're absolutely right. My point simply is that this woman, the example they cite in the advertisement is that the woman was smoking in a legal smoking section, so she was acting properly and should not have been assaulted.
Right.
I agree with you also that this is an extreme example.
This person was only assaulted. What about people that die as a result of breathing in smoke?
It shouldn't happen. But I think that we all agree, you, me, and the Tobacco Institute, that physical assault on somebody smoking is not the answer. But I think that you and I depart from the opinion of the Tobacco Institute in using that as an example to suggest that people should once again be encouraged to smoke.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Andy Kaufman, you know, the guy who was on Taxi?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer as a result of secondhand smoke.
That's frightening. It's a very frightening thought, and I think it's very sobering. I personally think one section of the ad is quite interesting, the one about freedom of speech. It says, including the freedom to advertise, it says a ban on cigarette advertising is not supported, according to a national poll, or not supported by a majority of Americans.
It's an addictive drug.
That's what it is. Well, you see, the interesting thing about advertising is they say in the ad that those that would ban cigarette ads to protect us from words and pictures ignore the First Amendment. I personally feel that there is some credence to the idea that as long as cigarette smoking is technically a legal activity within certain circumstances, that it may raise a legitimate First Amendment issue to ban advertising a legal substance, since from a purely technical legal standpoint, there are warnings that are included in the advertising. But on the other hand, in addition to the First Amendment issue, there is the issue of health that is raised and responsibility of promulgating a product that can literally cause death, not only to those that use it, but to those that are within the realm of the cigarette smoke. And I think that it raises a very interesting legal issue, but I don't think that it's an open and shut case. I don't think that this argument that it's ignoring the First Amendment is necessarily so. I mean, the First Amendment certainly should have a very wide berth, but I don't know that it's so much a First Amendment issue as whether it's an issue of individual judgment. I think perhaps they're right that as long as it's legal, that is, the Tobacco Institute is right, that as long as cigarette smoking is legal, it should not be banned outright from being advertised, that could be a violation of the First Amendment. However,
it has been banned since, I believe, 1970.
Well, television and radio. But, you know, this is the interesting thing that I found out, and I used to think until rather recently that it was an outright legal ban. But unless I'm mistaken, I heard recently that it is not legally banned from television and radio, but that back around 1969, the broadcasters in this country, both radio and TV, were concerned that the way the wind was blowing, you'll excuse the pun of smoke drifting around, the way the wind was blowing, that government was going to shortly ban advertising outright on radio and TV. And I think that the idea was that the broadcasters did not want a precedent set of the government being able to ban something like that outright, especially, I guess, where revenue was concerned, where advertising was concerned, and they didn't want to open the door on that through Congress passing a law, or I guess through the FCC perhaps being empowered to make a regulation banning advertising on radio and TV. So what they did instead was they self-banned the advertising. In other words, it may be so that technically the radio and TV advertisers in this country are not legally prevented from putting cigarette ads on the air, but that they all agreed that they would never do it again. And this way, the government didn't feel the motivation to act on actually legislating against radio and TV cigarette advertising.
A voluntary ban?
It was a self-imposed ban. Now, maybe a ban came from the government after that, but from what I was told, and I'm sorry that I can't be more documentary about it. I'm not being evasive, but my recollection was it was somebody that was in broadcasting that should have known what they were talking about, and I will try and find for you and for the listeners the specific source, or try and check into it more closely to make sure it's true. But I have the overriding impression that it was the radio and TV broadcasters themselves that banned it. So they apparently felt strongly enough that it should be taken off the air, even though they were going to lose a lot of revenue. They felt for their own purposes that they would rather do that than have the government set the precedent. And I can understand their thinking that way, and at the same time, it had the advantage to people who are interested in health issues of not having to hear cigarette advertising on the air.
Uh-huh. Now, at the same time, they would keep it in the magazines and newspapers. Interesting.
Yes. And books, paperback books, you know.
What, they advertise cigarettes in paperback books?
I've read paperback books where all of a sudden, in the middle of the book, there'll be a cardboard card instead of what you might find as a solicitation to order more paperbacks, or the kind of card you might find in a magazine,
uh-huh,
soliciting subscriptions. The same form of card, except it advertises cigarettes.
Fascinating. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. The program is Brain Damage. Our number is 632-6901. We're going to go right to the phones. A couple of statistics right before we do. Smoking is a major cause of stroke, the third leading cause of death in the United States. I believe stroke is the third leading cause of death, not smoking. Heart disease, I think, is the number one cause, and that's the major cause of that is smoking. Major cause of cancer, lung cancer, is smoking. And smoking is also associated with cancer of the uterine cervix. The prevalence of smoking among blacks, blue-collar workers, and the less educated still exceeds that of the overall population. Level of education appears to be the best single socio-demographic predictor of smoking. And as we said before, smoking is responsible for more than one out of every six deaths in the United States. This comes from an article in Wednesday's New York Times, entitled U.S. Report Raises Estimate of Smoking Toll. Our number is 632-6901. Tell us what you feel about this whole mess. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Oh, just when you thought it was safe to come out. Calling from the heart of Central Islip, Big Jim Doomsday is here.
Wake up,
listener audience, from all these boring statistics.
I thought you lived in Sound Beach.
Sound Beach, Eric.
I don't know. I always get you mixed up with somebody.
Oh, God.
Central Islip. Hey, well, okay. Now, you a smoker, Jim?
No, I don't smoke.
Why not?
Well, I'll tell you. It killed my father.
Did it really?
Oh, you should have seen. Oh, it was terrible. He was 65 pounds when he died. That cancer ate him alive.
That's something. How old was he?
About 65, I think.
That's rather young.
It's pretty bad, but what I called for... I always change the subject. I'm terrible.
Well, I'm not going to let you change the subject tonight because we have a very strict amount of time left.
I wanted to just commend you on last week's show. Some of the things you said, though, I didn't get to call because I was on the way to the disco out that way.
Oh, the disco, huh?
And where all the cigarettes are.
Well, now it's interesting you should mention the disco, because part of the article here, another article that we have. We hear complaints from smokers who feel discriminated against by no smoking rules on airplanes and elsewhere. Others, puffing away in bars and discos, seem aware of the danger but are either willing to take their chances or unable to help themselves. Now, when you went to the disco last week, did you see a lot of smokers there?
My clothes. When I leave there, my clothes smell like...
Yeah.
Tobacco Road, let me tell you.
Yeah, I have the same experiences. You smell so much like tobacco, people think you smoke, and that's sick. That tells you how much smoke you're being exposed to.
You know, I hear ROM phones in the background.
Yeah, well, we have ROM phones all over the place here.
But the thing is, Like I said before, we need these things. We need this stuff, Lee. I don't smoke, but we need this stuff.
We need what stuff? Cigarettes?
We'll have to die. I've said it before. Think of this. I have the statistics.
Is this a Malthusian?
800 million people a year are added to the population. That's 21 million a day. 875,000 every hour.
But don't you think it's kind of unconscionable that so much money is being made off these people that are really killing themselves?
We're killing ourselves because people aren't conscious of what we're doing to the environment. Forget about cigarettes. We haven't seen anything yet. Wait until the weather starts changing. Wait until the atmosphere starts warming up. We haven't seen anything yet. This is microscopic. This is a microcosm compared to what's going to happen soon.
Well, do you think if we do anything to stop this microcosm, it might have an effect on the bigger picture?
You mean cigarette smoking on the bigger picture?
Well, if we can come to terms with a major problem in society, maybe it will help us come to terms with other major problems before they become major problems.
Well, you know that the problem is that people are uneducated. That's the problem.
Uh-huh.
That is the problem.
That's the problem with every crisis we're facing, from AIDS to cigarette smoking to nuclear war. People must be educated.
That is the main thing, just like prejudice. People are prejudiced over things as silly as black and white, and if there weren't black and white people, there'd be people like there are now with blonde hair and black hair, and you would have that kind of prejudice.
Uh-huh, and skinheads and people that don't have any hair or people that have lots of hair.
But before I go, let me just say that the things that you said last week about being caretakers of the land, I tell you, I was almost in tears over that. It was so finely said.
That was moving, wasn't it?
I'm totally serious. I'm not kidding.
Well, I appreciate that, and we are caretakers of the land.
And the outer space, talking about outer space and things. I was in awe.
Well, the future is in space. Yes, I have to. Reiterate that. Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling, and stay away from the cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not into smoking, but like I said, anybody out there that doesn't believe it should have been there to see what happened to my father.
Uh huh.
Really, it was. I'll never forget it. When I saw him in the hospital, I'm telling you. And anybody's listening, I'm telling you, I did not recognize him. I said, I'm in the wrong room. Within 2 weeks, I did not recognize my father. He almost reminded me of a fetus. I couldn't believe it. It's so sad. I can't believe I can say it out loud, but I'm telling you.
Well, let me just ask you one more thing. When your father was smoking, were you aware of the danger then?
Oh, yeah. He quit cigarettes, then he went to cigars, but, you know, he was smoking them things like one after another.
Uh-huh.
He always had a cigar in his mouth.
Was he under a lot of pressure? Do you think that has something to do with it?
I don't know. Maybe us kids. I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. What do you suppose it would be like to live with me?
Well, yeah, that's a point there. But I don't know. There seems to be a better way, you know?
I think things were a little bit easier then. I mean, the amount of money he made back then in proportion to the way, you know, his salary in proportion to what the mortgage and everything was. I don't think, you know, we had it tough, but I don't think that it was like it is now, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but don't you think it's possible to be poor and still be happy and not be all tense about, you know, what you can afford and what you can't afford? Just get away with what you can?
And as far as smoking?
No, I'm not saying smoking, but you say there's a lot of pressure today, and the pressure is to make money and buy houses. I mean, why not just rent a house instead of buying a house? Why, you know, raise a big family, you know, just take it easy on yourself.
Yeah, but you don't have any equity. I can't see myself renting a house because what am I going to do when I get older? I got nothing. I've been renting, the rents go up. This way you have equity in the house. If you get yourself a house, you have your money's in there. It's going into something. That's a lot of pressure.
Right, but if you have to kill yourself to get to that stage, it's not worth it, is it?
Well, you have to, because like I said, the only reason it's like that is because there's so many people competing for one thing, and that's what causes this kind of thing. The competition today is fierce.
See, my view on that is when there's a lot of people competing for one thing, whether it's to get into law school or to buy houses or be yuppies, when there are a lot of people competing for something, the wisest step is always to just walk the other way and do something completely different than what everyone is after. That way, you won't be crowded. You'll be happy in a way that other people won't be able to understand. And I think in the future you'll be way ahead of them.
That's a good point, but still, you know.
Give it a try.
Well, I do things that are different than a lot of people, but I don't fit in. Like when I go to the discos and stuff, I don't have anything to say to any of these people. I don't even know why I go. Well, what the hell? I can't talk to them like I can talk to you about intelligent subjects. They're talking about, you know, the gold chain that they just bought. You know, Well, things that you're talking about.
You're looking on them as one kind of people, you know, and in actuality, we're all different people lumped together sometimes. You know, you see yourself as an individual apart from all of them.
Yeah,
and maybe they don't want to see themselves as individuals apart from all the people around them, and that's, you know, that's sad. I think it's a positive thing that you see yourself as different from other people.
Well, how can you help it? Look, we're talking on a radio. No, not that many people are listening to this. They don't want to hear this.
No, but a lot of people are waiting, and I should get to them.
Sure. You handled last week's show totally professionally. You did a great job.
Well, yeah, you're really making me turn red here with all these compliments, but thanks all the same.
All right, I'll see you.
Okay. 632-6901. Jim, any comments from the other studio?
I missed the first part of that, but apparently his father passed away from lung cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very sad.
And unfortunately, that's a story that's not all that uncommon.
Right.
So I'm sure we'll hear a couple more of those. 632-6901, good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Good evening, Eric. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm all right. The Jim was a very good call, and I second everything he said. He was very honest, and he was just a good call. And it's a pleasure to hear someone with intelligence calling a show called Brain Damage. But, you know, getting to your subject, I don't endorse any kind of tobacco products. I don't smoke. I probably my life have had about five cigarettes and a cigar. Every time I get a big commission check at work, I'll light up a cigar just as a joke. But that's about it on that, I think it's a bad industry, and I got a kick watching the news, okay? I believe it was Channel 4. This is after the Surgeon General came out with a statement this week about cigarette smoking or something like that.
Right, right.
And they had a spokeswoman, for the tobacco industry, and she was just obnoxious, seeing how great it is to smoke, and I think it's a big farce, and I think we should just do away with the industry. And hopefully they're pricing themselves out of the market. You know, some places now are charging $2 for a pack of cigarettes. Believable. What other things do we have on the agenda for this evening's broadcast?
Well, I think smoking is going to take up the vast majority of it. Do a lot of your coworkers smoke?
Yes, it is the number one subject in the office, without a question. Other than that, is what radio station to listen to in the office.
I see. Well, I wouldn't try to compete there, but
people are trying to cut back, and it is good. You do see people trying to cut back, but I don't know what we're going to do. One thing I did want to mention is I'm very happy to announce, for people not listening, this is Mr. Radio.
Okay.
Right now, I'm in the negotiating stage. Would Brookhaven Cable Television to come up with the, get this, this is the name of the show.
Okay.
Mr. Radio's No Frills Variety TV Show. Okay, it will be a 1-hour program, hopefully.
Uh-huh.
And should be starting in the spring, a 13-week trial run. It's in the embryo stage right now, but it looks good. So Mr. Radio is coming to the boob tubes.
Oh, that's really quite an accomplishment.
I would like to have maybe you two as one of my first show come down and, you know, schmooze.
That would be something.
Bilskin will be the co-host.
Oh, boy.
He'll be calling in every show with laughter, material. It's going to be a great show. And if anybody wants to call Brookhaven Cable and lend, you know, say, yes, we want Mr. Radio on Brookhaven Cable, then, you know, I'm all for that.
Well, let me add something to that. If you have an in with Brookhaven Cable, or if people want to do this for us, it would certainly be helpful. Brookhaven Cable, as well as a couple of other cable companies, have either refused or just haven't gotten around to carrying USB on their FM.
They usually carry WALK.
Oh, they carry all kinds of radio stations, but for some reason they leave us out of their FM service.
I think the whole reason is because you have Lister, you, and Lowe on your station.
No. That would get us on their venue. We had Lister,
Lister
on our station. Oh, yes. So if folks want to call Brookhaven and sort of say, hey, why don't you put USB on? And,
no, it is true. Because
it would be nice.
Lister.
Might be helpful.
Wait, because listen, there is a conspiracy in Washington against your reggae man, Lister, you, and Lowe. There's been memos sent to every cable company in the country not to air or simulcast any kind of Lister, you, and Lowe reggae show. That's the whole thing. There is conspiracy. There are memos being sent around every Long Island station I know. There is a conspiracy.
I don't have anything against conspiracies, but I cannot deal with memos. I'm sorry.
Wait. Now, this is the whole campaign, people. We're getting Mr. Radio on Brookhaven Cable along with Stillskin. We will have no CBers on our show. It'll be comedy. We'll have the Harvey Bristol Cream Girl on the show. But no CBers.
Mr. Radio, will you help us get our radio station on cable?
Do my best. I know the program director, Chris Raskoff.
Okay, you make sure you mention it to him, and I will support your endeavors there.
Good day.
Okay.
Good day.
Fair enough. 632-6901. The topic is smoking. Do you smoke? Do you know people who smoke? And what do you do about it? What can we as people do? Or whatever is out there. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Evening, Mr. Corley.
Good evening.
This is Stiltskin.
Speak of the devil, yes.
I have some gripes, most of them pertaining to you and your show.
Do you have anything to say about smoking?
I do not support it in any way, shape, or form.
Uh-huh, yeah, so I assume you don't smoke yourself.
No, I do not. I do have a few family members that smoke, and I am a...
Well, now, I assume they're older family members.
Yeah.
And there's not much you can do about them smoking.
No, there's not.
Do you ever say smoking is dangerous, you shouldn't do it?
Yes, several times I've said that.
Do you get injured when you do that?
No, my parents are not like that.
Uh-huh. Well, do you think they're hooked? Do you think they just can't help themselves?
On occasion I've thought of that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, here's what I wanted to get.
Okay, go ahead.
When I'm done with these scathing critiques, you will be forced to eat crow. Okay.
Oh, if there's some around here, go ahead.
Okay.
Make it fast, though.
I'm sick of these 10-minute intros. It takes up valuable showtime.
Uh-huh.
Your little composition is very, very, very appealing to the ear, but it should be edited down to...
Well, I'll tell you this now. There is a new intro in the works. It is being designed. It's in the research and development stage right now. So in a few weeks, you should be hearing a new intro to the program.
Okay.
So I'm sure that makes you happy.
Okay. Ooh,
someone pick up the extension there.
Hello? This is the operator. The Ho Ho Kitchen wants to make an emergency interruption. 7518232. Will you accept it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
All right, if you hang it, we'll call you.
Wait. Is this going to cost me?
No, the other party's calling you back.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Hmm.
Hello?
Are you still with us?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, boy.
Okay, now, here's what I'm getting to here. I think there may be a conspiracy going on about your... You're accepting all these calls from the CB people.
Well, we accept whatever calls come in to 632-6901, you know, and sometimes people, they just dial faster than other people.
You're taking payola?
Well, gosh, if I was taking payola, I wouldn't be able to say so on the air, you know.
Okay.
That's illegal to say you're taking payola.
I know someone that has tried one of these quit-smoking things, and as a matter of fact, they work at your very station.
Jim tells me it's illegal to take payola, not... Oh, okay, I misunderstood then. I misunderstood entirely. I'm sorry. My mistake. Not the first offense. Okay, don't worry about it. What was that caller?
Someone at your station tried one of those quit-smoking.
And it didn't work?
It did not work because they were not aware of the fact that it... would not work for crack. It was Lister.
Very funny. Very
well. I would.
I want to say this. Yeah, Lister might act crazy, but he don't do crack.
That's right.
That's just all I want to say on that. Yeah. 632-6901. But, you know, crack is just like another extension of the whole thing, you know? It's just another addiction. It's just much deadlier.
Mm-hmm.
But how can you say smoking is minor? You know, it seems minor. It seems such a normal thing because everyone does it. If everyone was smoking crack and going around killing each other, then you'd see, a whole other society. We smoking crack is normal. Yeah, it's a problem, but... You got to feel sorry for people that do that.
Sure.
Cigarettes are just like a more sophisticated way of smoking crack.
I think it's really a question of, I agree, and I think it's a question of two big things. One, that people who smoke have more sympathy that people sympathize more with those who, people who don't smoke should sympathize more with people who do smoke, and I count myself amongst those, that I think we should be more sensitive to the fact that many of them probably want to stop, but they can't. It doesn't excuse them.
Okay. But Jim, how are we going to be sympathetic? What do we do? Do we look at them with sad eyes and say, "Oh, you poor thing"? Do we hand them cigarettes and try to feed them to keep them happy during their short lives? What do we do? You know, how are you sympathetic? We provide programs. We talk about it. You know, a lot over TV and radio. We print articles and scientific studies are started to help people quit smoking. What more can we do?
Look, Eric, I'm trying to answer the question.
I'm trying to ask the question.
Look,
question.
I'm trying to tell you, Eric.
Okay.
Yeah, the answer is obvious. Look at them with sad eyes. No. The answer. the answer is that you. I don't know. It sounded good. No, actually, what I have in mind is that what we should do.
I hope it's not detention camps or something like that.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Sounds like you have a plan of some sort.
Oh, no. What we should do...
island, South America. Go ahead.
What we should do is perhaps, and I know it's easier said than done, perhaps if we can, some of us who don't smoke should talk to those people that we know who do smoke and with properly sad eyes, say to them, friend or relative, if they're approachable, friend or relative, I know that you smoke. I don't think you're a bad person because you do. I don't think you lack character. I don't think you lack discipline. I don't think that you're a bad person or a mean person or a perverse individual. But I understand that it's not an easy habit to break. And if there's any way that I can be of assistance to you, if there's something troubling you that is not too private for you to discuss, or if there are things that are making you anxious that are not too private for you to discuss, perhaps you'd want to talk about them with me, maybe just get them off your chest, or maybe there are practical things that I can do to assist you that might make it easier for you to quit, even though there'd still be the physical addiction to deal with, perhaps help the psychological addiction by helping the person be less anxious, or maybe encouraging them to either attend a non-smoking program or consult with a mental health professional. I think one offshoot of this problem is that I bet some people still find a stigma attached to going to speak to a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Uh-huh.
And I think it should be perhaps, again, if a person is approachable, it should be imparted to them that there's absolutely no shame in doing that. And
of course, there's a financial problem, too.
Yes, but some people may have insurance programs where that is at least partially paid for. But that's a very good point you raise, the financial aspect of it. And I think that if there are many cases where people cannot afford that, I think there should definitely, if they not already are, there should definitely be money spent by the government at whatever level is appropriate of the government for free clinics,
that's the whole question.
Non-smoking clinics. I think that's money very well spent.
That's the whole question of national health. That's another topic. Us being the only capitalist country in the Western society that doesn't provide some kind of national health care. That's something else entirely. But perhaps to get through to the people that are living in a situation where a member of the family smokes, a member of or a close friend or someone, just think of the possibility of that person contracting a fatal disease and not being around anymore. Now, it's we're not just talking numbers here. This is something that is quite possible. You might even say it's likely that a person that smokes on a consistent basis, not even someone who chain smokes a hell of a lot, but someone who just smokes on a daily basis, say, or even a couple of times a week, every cigarette counts. Now think of what it would be like to see that person die. Do you really want that to happen? And when you realize that it is a possibility, that actually could be the scenario, and once it happens, it happens. You can't turn back the clock. So what you have here is you have an opportunity to try to change something. It's going to be difficult. You have to, you know, put up with a little bit of pain and suffering as far as breaking an addictive habit. But if you really care about somebody, if you're really into spending some time on this planet with a person that you like, whether it's a friend, a relative, or a neighbor, or whatever, maybe it's time to step forward and just do what you can and help this person out, because this person already is suffering by being addicted to something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have any answers as to how to do this.
I guess it depends on the particular individuals involved, but I think you're raising a good way of motivating people.
Right. Perhaps the best way is just to go up to the person and say, you know, it would hurt me a lot if you weren't around, and this is a path that you're on, which I'd like you to get off.
Mm-hmm.
And that might get through to them.
Yes, I think there are certain instances where it does. I think that it doesn't necessarily work for everybody. There are people who are so entrenched in it that it's still difficult for them, even after someone says something like that. But I think there are others to whom it is, even those who are entrenched in the habit, that it makes a difference to them to have someone say that to them on two levels. First, that they realize maybe it's brought home to them explicitly by someone on a one-to-one basis that they could die easily from what they're doing. And also that not only for their own sake, but for the sake of the people that care about them, that they should try and keep themselves from dying, because it would be such a hurtful thing to those that they left behind, especially when it's something that could be reversed. Because I think something that has to be pointed out to somebody who does smoke, to reassure them and to help motivate them, is that it's a scientific fact that when someone stops smoking, the damage that has Eric, I know you had to do something. I don't know if you heard what
right.
I was saying.
Yeah, it does.
And that's motivation. I mean, in one sense, it's something that's good in and of itself, but in a more direct sense, it's motivation to somebody to stop, because even if they've been smoking for years, it keeps them from making the excuse, well, it doesn't matter anyway, what's done is done.
Right.
But it's a wonderful, wonderful fact of human biology.
There is a point of no return.
Yes, definitely. But you're right. What you want to do is emphasize to the smoker, listen, you still have a chance. Don't reach the point of no return. Stop now before you get to that brink and before you get to death, in other words.
And the thing is, there's no set point of no return. It's not after 10 years of smoking.
It could
happen after a couple of years for
right.
some people.
It's the individual.
You don't know. So the best thing is just not to get started.
Exactly.
And they say the younger you get started, too, the harder it is to quit, and I believe
right.
that.
I could understand that. And I think that it's something that perhaps some young people have taken to heart, because there are still young people that smoke, but it doesn't seem to be to the extent that it once was, as far as a habit that people automatically would get into in their teenage years.
Our number is 632-6901, area code 516. Let's take some calls. Good evening, you're in Brain Damage.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. You know what one of the most annoying things is?
What's that?
What?
What's the most annoying thing?
One of the most annoying things is early in the morning, you get on the bus. Well, I'm in high school anyway. You get on the bus.
Uh-huh.
What you smell is in the back a couple of kids lighting up.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm half awake. I really don't like the smell of tobacco, and it really sort of bugs me when at 7:10 in the morning, I've got this odor of tobacco coming towards my nose.
Uh-huh.
Really bothers me.
Well, now, being on a school bus is no different than being on a commuter train. You know, it's just as annoying no matter what kind of transportation you're taking. And a lot of people have to face that in the office, on trains, and carpools, on school buses, you know, and in school, too. I remember I had an English class here at Stony Brook once, and half the class started smoking, including the teacher, you know. I really felt kind of awkward saying anything, so I didn't, you know. I mean, how do you tell a teacher to stop smoking, you know? You can't tell me that's not going to adversely affect your grade.
Hmm. What was I going to say? Oh, about education.
Yeah.
I'm not completely sure. I don't completely agree with someone saying that education is what's lacking, because a lot of my friends who smoke, actually all my friends who smoke, know what it can do to you.
Okay, but that's only part of the story, what it can do to you. Okay, they know what it can do to you. Do they know about the ill effects of social pressure, things, you know, your peers telling you that you have to do something to be cool? Do they know anything about saying no to that, and what, you know, what the advantages of saying no are?
Well, I think they do, and when I ask them, you know, why do you smoke, why do you do this, their answer to me invariably is, well, I'm going to die anyway.
Well,
and I think that's the whole attitude, you know, with drugs, with anything. I think that's the attitude.
Yeah, but do they want to die in 5 years? What's the deal here?
That's just because you don't understand. When you're a teenager, nothing can happen to you. When you're a teenager, you're invincible. When you're a teenager, you're immortal.
What do you think brings that on?
I really don't know. You know.
Well, you're a teenager, aren't you invincible?
I'm a teenager. I don't feel that way. But to a certain extent, you know, you feel that you can do. I mean, you feel that you can do any. Wait, there's another phone. Wait just a second.
Call waiting.
On hold.
The evils of call waiting. Happens all the time. Could be our call waiting. No, we don't have call waiting. Thank God for that.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's
call waiting.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really don't know what brings it on. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I assume you don't smoke.
No.
Do people in your family smoke?
My mother has smoked in the past. She really doesn't smoke now.
Uh-huh. That's good. We'll try to keep her off it.
I don't think, though, that you're going to get legislation against smoking.
Well, I don't think legislation would do any good. You know, people have to want to not smoke. You know, you don't have legislation against people stapling themselves, you know, on their wrists, but you don't see very many people doing it because it's not considered a desirable thing.
But look at, what is it? Who are the guys who just annexed Kraft?
Who just what?
Annexed Kraft. Philip Morris.
Philip Morris,
which is basically a tobacco company.
Very basically a tobacco. Yeah, I think that's what they are.
Now, it's also the biggest, it just completed the biggest takeover in history.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, if you believe that big business controls government, as I do, you know, those guys basically have a say whether or not anything is going to happen.
Well, that's the scary part, you know. Literally, a huge corporation is making money off death.
You know,
there's no question about it. People are dying so that they can make profits. I don't think it can be any clearer cut than that.
The government complains how drug lords control Central America and stuff like that.
Right.
Tobacco lords control America.
Right. It's just not as apparent because it's not as radical in effect.
Well,
but it takes time. It takes a little bit of time, but it's not, you know, you don't see people freaking out on the streets because of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
If you did, that might make it a little, you know, a little easier to regulate, but it's the slow, painful effect.
What interests me is the possibility of tobacco companies diversifying their product or changing the nature of their product in such a way that it does not harm people who use it. And I wonder, because I can't know at this point, but I wonder to what extent there has been research done, whether it's by tobacco companies or not, into non-lethal or non-harmful tobacco products, and if the research has been done, whether they might have in mind at some point introducing these products to see if they're popular.
Well, they're smokeless cigarettes, right?
Right. That's the kind of thing I have in mind.
I mean, I don't know if they're any good. Does anyone know?
I don't know either, but it seems to me that on two counts, first, for the sake of people who are so addicted that it's almost impossible for them to stop, it might be quite a blessing that this way they could still have their smoke, their cigarette, whatever, and would not have to be harmed or die from what they're doing. And the second count, the practical consideration of the economic effect of cigarette companies suddenly going out of business. I'm thinking in terms of the effect on tobacco farmers and the effect on the employees, not only management but staff, of the different areas of the production and promotion and distribution of tobacco would have quite a profound effect, I'm sure, on a lot of people and on certain areas of the country. And the advantage to a non-harmful cigarette product is that these companies could still remain geared up for a lot of production, and it would not necessarily have to result in all kinds of layoffs and all kinds of economic disruption, and people could still have their cigarettes who wanted them, and the people wouldn't be dying or getting sick from it. And so I wonder if it is technologically, first of all, if it's technologically possible to do such a thing, number one. Number two, if it is technologically possible, if it has already been done. And number three, if it's already been done, is there a reason why it hasn't been more extensively distributed?
I'm sure the reason is profits. I'm sure that's what it all boils down to. You know?
Almighty dollar.
Well, I wonder if it's a case of a concern that there might be... Well, you see, I wonder if it's a concern that there might be an initial disruption in profits in the short term, but perhaps in the long term, the profits would not be disrupted, that many people who smoke, who want desperately to stop but can't, would switch to the non-lethal product, feeling that it's a good substitute, they can stick with the habit, and that they don't have to die from it. And that could result, as a matter of fact, from a purely commercial standpoint, I could see if this non-lethal product caught on, this hypothetical non-lethal product caught on, I could see the cigarette companies having such a tremendous demand for it that they could charge, instead of, let's say, the $2 per pack you might see nowadays for a regular pack of cigarettes, $4 per pack. I think people would be willing to spend a lot of money on it.
The thing is, though, when you're hooked on something, whether it's alcohol, cigarettes, or a classic Coke, the slightest change, you know, is not going to win public favor.
Even
the most subtle change in flavor, the diehard addicts are going to want exactly what it is they're used to.
Unless
it's eliminated completely.
Some will. I agree that some will, but I wonder whether there are many cigarette smokers that don't even like the taste that much, but that are psychologically addicted, and that they would definitely switch to the product. And for those that were left, I'm not saying the heck with them, but I'm saying that it would at least be a smaller number of people. And
but, you see, I don't think it's a psychological addiction. I think it's a true physical addiction.
Well, I think it's both. I think it's both, and I think that each individual has it in a greater or lesser proportions than the other person of what kind of addiction it is.
I agree with you that
the physical part is very difficult.
How many drugs do you see nuzzling a bottle of Moosey?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
What was that?
How many drunks do you see muzzling a bottle of Moosey?
The caller makes an excellent point. He's right about that. What I'm suggesting is that there are people on the borderline who aren't so badly entrenched that they couldn't try something different. And you see, to my way of thinking, the physical addiction is partly ruled by the psychological addiction. Somebody, even if they're physically addicted to cigarettes, tries something different, a hypothetical non-harmful cigarette product, and it doesn't quite meet their needs, but it to some extent meets their needs. They may feel psychologically inspired to tough it out a little more than they would have, and that may wean them away from the physical addiction.
Oh, well.
It may.
I don't know for sure. I'm just suggesting that as a possibility.
But the caller
is correct that there are people who all they want, and what you said, Eric, also is true. All they want is the nicotine, is what is in the tobacco itself, the way it is constituted presently.
Right. I think the strongest thing we can do is just say, if you're a person that doesn't smoke, don't start, and then eventually more people won't be smoking, and the other ones will either quit or plainly put, die off. Because that's where it's leading to.
I think if
more people don't smoke and then don't start, that's the only way to really keep it clean.
I think that that's a big plus if people can do that. And I wonder if it's the way they show some driver education courses in high schools show rather explicit scenes of accidents to encourage people to drive safely. I wonder if the thing to do, and maybe this has already been done, is to show
films of people who agreed to do so, but of cancer victims to show what they look like the description that Jim from Central Islip gave before was a rather heartrending description, and maybe seeing it graphically could really convince them.
I'm going to tell you just such a story, caller. I want to thank you for calling.
Okay, bye.
And see you later. Our phone number is 632-6901. We are going to try to get to all the calls in the line now. Let me first tell you something that was a review in the TV section of the Times this week. Smoking, Everything You and Your Family Need to Know on Home Box Office at various times over the next week or so on HBO, marks the 25th anniversary of the Surgeon General's report linking cigarette smoking and lung cancer. Nothing good has been discovered about smoking in the interim. Dr. C. Everett Koop, the present Surgeon General, brings home the facts in an effectively packaged half hour that intersperses cigarette advertisements past and the rationalizations of smokers present with the Surgeon General's figures on death rates from smoking-related diseases. His data are easily summed up. Smoking is by far the leading cause of preventable death in America. Remember, preventable death. The program, smartly produced by Alvin H. Perlmutter, does not pretend to even-handedness between tobacco companies and health authorities. It begins with little Johnny the bellhop calling for Philip Morris in the days when cigarette advertising was still permitted on television. We also see Lucille Ball, Steve McQueen, and Charlton Heston plugging their ostensibly favorite brands. Dr. Koop's arithmetic is pitiless. If you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, you run 10 times the risk of lung cancer and twice the risk of heart disease and are likely to live 6 years less than a non-smoker. Amid such statistics, we are shown an old commercial that promises, "You'll feel better smoking Philip Morris." A 57-year-old cancer victim, looking about 70, tells of smoking 4 packs a day for many years and responding to warnings with, "They don't mean me." Even as he is dying, a cigarette is stuck in his lips. A month after the filming, he is dead. We hear complaints from smokers who feel discriminated against by no-smoking rules on airplanes and elsewhere. Others puffing away in bars and discos seem aware of the danger but are either willing to take their chances or unable to help themselves. Pregnant women are put on notice that smoking increases the risk of miscarriage, premature births, and less sturdy children. People who really don't have a say in this whole thing. Young folks are told the earlier they start, the harder it is to quit, and non-smokers who spend a lot of time with smokers are notified that 2,400 non-smokers a year will die from secondhand smoke. Cigar and pipe smokers, the Surgeon General warns, may be inviting cancer of the mouth or tongue. Dr. Koop offers no testimonials to low-tar, low-nicotine cigarettes. He points out in a straightforward way that smokers who switch tend to smoke more, puff more, or inhale more deeply, or hold the smoke in their lungs longer to make up for the nicotine they miss. Nicotine, he emphasizes, is as addictive as heroin or cocaine. In a phrase, there is no such thing as a safe cigarette. The one encouraging piece of information here is that 43 million Americans have stopped smoking, despite the $7 million a day the cigarette industry spends to encourage their craving. Dr. Koop's smoke-dispelling message comes down to the observation that the odds against the smoker are of such a magnitude that it's just not worth taking the risk. The words of that dying man resonate through this forceful program. "I wish I could do it over again." And that program will be shown on Home Box Office this Tuesday, January 23rd and January 26th. Check your listings to see when it will be on. It's called Smoking Everything You and Your Family Need to Know. And, Jim, before we take the calls, I just perhaps in response to what we were talking about as far as advertising before, couldn't smoking be considered a form of pornography? You know, you don't advertise pornography in magazine pages and on newspapers because it's an affront to society. It's indecent. Now, I think corporations that make money off people dying is just as much an obscenity, and that's really what it boils down to. This is a fact. Smoking causes death. The cigarette companies don't care. They spend $7 million a day advertising it, tormenting people that have quit successfully, tormenting them into wanting to start again. Now, think of the harm that can do. Think of how it can drive people crazy seeing an ad for a cigarette that makes it seem like they're crazy for not doing it. You know, it makes it seem like they're going to get all the girls and ride horses and do God knows what else. You know, every subway car has these big advertisements of all these people, and they're, you know, it's a contradiction because they all smile and they have these big white teeth. You know, smokers don't have white teeth. Come on. it's nuts.
You're right.
So based on all that, I think, you know, maybe smoking advertisements can be banned and it doesn't violate First Amendment rights because it's something in contrast to the good of society. It's like, you know, advertising anarchy, which actually wouldn't be such a bad idea sometimes, but, you know, advertising things that are just rejected by society as being unhealthy, you know, like prostitution. You don't see that advertised in newspapers. There's a reason for that.
Well, it's... Oh, is my microphone on?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I still think that it's something that can be self-regulated, that it, you see, since it's still illegal, it's, see, you mentioned prostitution. Prostitution in most states, except I guess Nevada, is illegal technically.
Uh-huh.
So it may legitimately be illegal to advertise it. And let's say certain drugs are illegal. So you're right, you're not going to open a magazine and see for the best tasting crack smoke brand X, but let's look at alcohol, for example. That's a legal product under certain circumstances, and there is advertising even for certain forms of alcohol on TV and radio. Not certain hard liquor, but that's also a self-imposed regulation. But wine is advertised extensively, and beer, and I'm sure there are many alcoholics that go crazy when they see this stuff advertised, when they see magazine or newspaper advertising. And you raise a good point. I'm sure you'd agree with me about that. I'm not saying this to contradict what you said. What I'm suggesting is that a situation where more and more precedents are set for banning the advertising of what are legal products or services, I think, is a bad precedent of government intervention.
Right, I agree with that, but should it be a legal thing? You know, that's what I'm saying.
That is more the question. Right. I think that raises an important issue, because what I'm wondering is, if it was made illegal, would we have, in a way, an even worse problem than we have now? What I mean by that is that those people who couldn't get cigarettes legally would then be willing to spend tremendous amounts of money to get the cigarettes. And instead of having tobacco companies that were legally constituted, you would have cigarette pushers that were illegally constituted in what they were doing. And you would have possibly more violence, because of people that wanted to, in the same way you have violence over drug wars, you would have more violence over, like, cigarette wars. So I don't know if that's the solution. I think that it'll come from more and more people. I'll finish up what I was saying. Come from more and more people quitting, and the tobacco companies realizing it's going to be more profitable for them to go to non-lethal, non-harmful products. And through increased education, I think that's the way to go.
Okay, let's take care of these calls. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Oh, hi, Eric. What are you doing?
We're on the radio here.
Let me see. Are you going to play that tape tonight? I was just calling about that.
Not tonight. You have anything to say about the topic?
I don't know. My friend does. He's calling from Mount Vernon. It's on a three-way line.
Yeah, well, we had a conference line going on here waiting to get on.
Okay, well, you fellas smoke? That's what we're talking about tonight.
Well, I wasn't believing right, but did I hear you say you wanted to ban smoking advertisements altogether?
Well, we're considering that aspect of it because of the number of people that are hooked and can't get out, you know, and the cigarette companies just seem to want to drag as many people into this bottomless pit as possible.
Well, of course they want to make some profit.
Right. That's what it boils down to. Should they be allowed to do this at you know, at the expense of people's lives?
Well, if you go under our Constitution and our rights, they have a right to make business and to get people under what they want.
Well, if that's the case, how come things like marijuana and cocaine aren't allowed to be advertised? You know, they do harm too, yet they're illegal for some reason. Why are cigarettes legal?
Because cigarettes are habit forming. Marijuana and heroin and cocaine are addictive.
Well, nicotine is addictive. And nicotine is in every cigarette. You see?
Yeah.
That's really the debate.
But do you get withdrawal symptoms from cigarettes?
I think some people do. I think they get very edgy, irritable, and, you know,
oh, yes.
It's hard. I've never had to experience it. Thank God I've never gotten that far. But it's hard to break the habit of cigarettes.
You're a former smoker?
Sorry?
I've
smoked maybe 2 cigarettes in my entire life. And believe me, neither one of them are very pleasant.
Well, no smoker smokes because he enjoys the taste, really. I think that's just a gimmick.
Uh-huh.
No, I think there are those that do.
Once you get hooked on the nicotine is what it is, it's just the cigarettes, the habit forming.
That's, you know, it's possible they might start off enjoying the taste, and then after a while the taste becomes kind of meaningless. You know, they just become hooked on the whole thing.
People that wake up first thing in the morning and their first reaction is to light up a cigarette now. Why do they do that? Because they're used to it or because they enjoy the cigarette?
Well, you know, there's lots of things I enjoy the taste of, but I don't wake up first thing in the morning and run for it, you know. So I think that would indicate to you right there that you have some kind of problem. But I think what we need is we need more support groups. We need more
yes.
places for the people to turn. Like, I'm a smoker. I'm addicted to cigarettes. Where do I go? I don't really know. You know, if anyone has an answer to that, please let us know. Anyway, thank you for calling. We have a bunch of other calls. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I like smoking. I think people should be allowed to smoke.
Okay. You're a smoker yourself, then?
Yes, I am.
How long have you been smoking for?
Let me see. About 9 years now.
Uh-huh. And do you feel that if you wanted to stop, you could stop?
Yeah, if I wanted to, I think I could stop.
Uh huh. Does
if I really wanted to, but I like to smoke. I think it's a comfort to have a cigarette at sometimes.
Uh huh. What does it calm you down or?
Yeah, if I'm a little nervous or whatever, it's relaxing.
Well, now, what do you think of the Surgeon General's report that came out this week, though, that says so many people die from smoking cigarettes, and all the constant reports we hear to that effect.
Well, you know, if you want to smoke, you know, I think you should be allowed to. That's your choice. You
right,
know?
It's your choice, but I'm asking you what...
You.
How do you...
If somebody doesn't want me smoking around them, you know, all right, I won't smoke. That's fine with me.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, hey, if I'm at home, if I'm not around anybody, you know, I should have cigarettes.
Uh-huh. What is the call?
If I want them, you know, and if you outlawed cigarettes... You know, you could make a fortune running in cigarettes from Canada, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, that would create... create a whole new kind of crime. It would probably be the best thing since Prohibition for criminals, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because, you couldn't stop it. So many people want it, it's going to get through.
Well, now, I'm just curious, though, as someone who does smoke, why do you continue in the face of all of this evidence that smoking causes a lot of health problems, increase in heart disease, cancer, stroke? Doesn't that bother you at all?
Well, I don't smoke all that much, you know.
Well, how much do you smoke?
I smoke about maybe 15 a day.
What is that equivalent to as far as packs?
Pack and a half.
Almost three quarters of a pack.
Three quarters of a pack.
Right around there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fairly considerable number.
You know, you got to die of something, you know. Sooner or later, you're going to die.
That's true, but...
If you die at 70 from lung cancer, you have lived almost... 20 years more than the average person lives, say, in 1910.
Yes, but, sir, do you want to die of lung cancer? That's not a very nice way to go.
I think...
No matter if you're 70, 80, or 50.
I think that if I had... I don't know if I would want to linger. I might, you know, just knock myself off. You know, I wouldn't lay around. But, you know, I think within...
Right, but look at what you're saying. You're saying that, you know, you would want to smoke and then kill yourself. That doesn't seem like a very productive life.
I don't want to die from it, but it just doesn't bother me right now.
How old is the caller, if I can ask?
Can you hear, Jim?
I guess
I'm 23.
Okay. When you say, well, first of all, I think people can die earlier than 70. They can die in their 20s, 30s, whatever, maybe even younger.
two questions. First, what do you think about the prospect of you dying way before your 70th birthday? And the next question, even if, let's say, you were to die at 70, why not live till 80 or 90 or beyond, since people can do that?
You know, you could die. I feel that I could die at any time. I could die in a car accident. Who knows?
Well, I agree with that. That's a good point.
If I do die, you know, I'm dead.
Well, yeah, except for the fact...
But still, you're careful when you drive a car, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Because you want to extend your life.
It's true, but
there is that chance.
It's true, but it's not preordained that you're going to die in an accident. And
no.
if there's evidence specifically that the smoking could kill you earlier than you ordinarily would have died, what do you think of the argument that you should stop smoking so at least you will remove one more possible source of death and from the likelihood of the early death coming to you?
I really don't think there's that great of a chance that I'll die that early.
Why not?
I think even, you know, if you do smoke, you know, that's pretty, it's fairly unusual that you die from 36 or whatever from lung cancer.
All right, but even if you die in your 50s, don't you see yourself as wanting to live a little longer than that? I mean, is life after 50 that bad?
I don't know. It might not be. Who knows?
Well, let me point this out as one final argument.
I don't want to give up having drinks once in a while. That can be bad for you, too.
Well, once in a while having drinks, I don't think is any comparison to smoking a lot of cigarettes every day. You know, I think that has a much more adverse effect on you. And I would suggest, if nothing else, sir, just read the report. Look into it a little bit and then decide for yourself whether or not you want to keep doing this.
I've read a lot of literature on it. I know what it does to you.
I think one of the things that caller said is one argument I want.
I could say right now I have no desire to quit at all.
I understand. What I was going to suggest to the caller is that, and I'm not talking down to you when I say this, believe me, I have, you know, respect for you as an individual. What I want to suggest to you when you say that you're not that impressed with the idea or negatively impressed with the idea of dying at 50, it seems like a pretty distant point to you because you're 23 now. But if you look at it this way, let's say I happen to be 37, so I'm about 14 years older than you. But in about another 14 years, I'm going to be in my early 50s. So I'm like about halfway between you and age 50. And even though I'm not right there now, I'm that much closer. And 50 is a visualizable age to me right now. 40 certainly is, and even 50 is. Maybe it's not that much of an age to you right now to conceive of, but how would you be thinking, let's say, if you were halfway there and could see 50 coming over the horizon of the next decade you're about to enter? Do you still really think you'd be that casual about the idea that you might die at 50?
I get that, to tell you the truth. But,
pardon?
I know plenty of people that are 50 that still smoke.
But they're,
you know.
But they may have been fortunate enough not to be dying at that age. What I'm suggesting is that maybe the reason why you're not, it doesn't really make that much of an impact on you, is not because there's something wrong with you. I think it's just that it's a question of age perspective. And I think a big problem is that people who tend to be younger in their teens or in their 20s normally, naturally, don't think that 40 or 50 is anywhere near where they're at that point. But the years do start to go by. I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. It happens. And then all of a sudden you're at 50, and if you've been smoking all that time, you've greatly increased your chances of dying early. And you ask somebody in their 50s who does have cancer, like this man on a TV show, and he desperately wanted to do it over again. He wanted to live. Life meant something to him at 50, or someone at 60 or 70, life can mean a lot. I know people in their 70s.
Jim, I'd like to go on to another call, but if we could just, I'll just say one last thing to the caller. As long as you know what's happening, just, you know, I'd be happy knowing that you were reading up on everything.
Yeah, I think there'll be a cure for cancer by the time I'm 50. I'll be 50 in, what is it, 2015? I think by then they'll have serious breakthroughs.
Well, I hope so.
You'll be able to cure, because they're really rapidly coming up on big cancer breakthroughs with these new antibody injections and all I've been reading about.
Well, you have a lot of faith in technology, and I don't want to say that I don't.
Science fiction anymore. It's right on the horizon, I feel.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thanks very much for calling, and good luck to you.
You too.
Okay, 632-6901. Brother Nick is here.
Good evening. Welcome. Thank you, Eric.
Oh, we're imposing on your program again.
It's okay. It's okay.
Well, I was hoping you would join our conversation here, since we do seem to be on a roll here as far as the cigarette business.
Well, my own personal opinion, and I just never could understand the concept of cigarette smoking. I never could. I've had this discussion so many times with so many cigarette smoker friends, and they seem to really need it,
uh-huh.
and I don't understand why.
Uh-huh.
And I've inquired. And by the way, I'd like to thank Jim Weiner for doing this show with me. It's the first time I've ever been on the air with Jim Weiner.
Well, now you can't see each other. You're in different parts of the studio, but you can talk to each other through your headphones, which is very very nice thing.
Yes, it is.
Jim, you can hear Nick all right?
Oh, yes, it's very nice of him to say that. It's an honor for me to be part of the Brothers program.
Jim, this is a big moment for me.
In a sense, we're all brothers here, you know?
Yes, that's why I meant the Brothers Capozzi. But yes, we are all brothers here.
Yeah, that's a rather nice thought. Before we get too maudlin, though, let's see if we can zip through these other calls that have been waiting for such a long time. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, this is Uncle Charlie from My Three Sons. I'm here, sitting here with Aunt B from Mayberry RFD and the... Andy Taylor. Also, we're mourning the 10th anniversary of Sebastian Cabot's death, Mr. French, who was a dear friend. Hold on, Chip. Get the pumpkin pie. Yeah. Do the laundry. Hello.
Yes, hi.
also, Mrs. Livingston is here from courtship of Eddie's father.
I remember Mrs. Livingston.
Yeah, she's right now in a negligee. She's gained a little weight, but she does hang out at the Ho-Ho Kitchen in Selden.
Well, can the caller name the detective series that Sebastian Cabot starred in?
No, I can't. Let me just put it this way. This is Uncle Charlie, and I only hang out with people who were in the maid or butler capacity.
Uh-huh.
One of my closest friends is Hazel, and she's now in a nursing home in Westport, Connecticut. And I just want to say, Hazel, if you're listening, you are inspiration to not only me and Mr. Was it Mr. B or Mr. D?
It was Mr. B, I think.
Mr. B. Mr. Baxter, yes. Yeah. Hazel, please recuperate. You're beautiful. We love your red hair. Dodie. Remember Dodie? Does anybody remember Dodie?
With a name like that, it'd be hard to forget.
She was on our show, My Three Sons. She had no teeth in the front. She's now a full, mature woman of 21 years old.
And she has teeth, I hope.
I just want to say Dodie, who is a beautiful person. She's the stepdaughter to Fred McMurray on the show.
Oh.
Dodie, you're beautiful. Thank God your teeth came in finally in the front.
Yes.
I think she does some kind of a theatrical thing in Lower Manhattan now.
Also, I would like to talk about the Ho-Ho Kitchen in Selden.
Well, I think you just did, but thanks very much for calling. You know, that call had absolutely nothing to do with tonight's topic.
It's incredible.
Oh. Well, it had a little to do with the fact that there was an emergency call received from the Ho-Ho Kitchen by Stiltskin, I think it was, right? Wasn't it?
That's an interesting tie-in. We'll have our researchers figure out
perhaps the later stages of cigarette smoking.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
That could be. We could have looked at the future there.
The whole kitchen could use it as an advertising gambit. The finest in cuisine and emergency telephone calls.
Yes, yes, yes. Let's see who else is here. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, yeah. Whisper smoke ganja. Whisper smoke ganja. Whisper smoke ganja. Whisper smoke ganja.
I believe it's saying Lister smokes ganja.
Yeah.
Rather poetic, isn't it?
Right.
Poetic. Pathetic. Whatever.
Pathetic, yeah. That's...
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, my dad smokes, and
like,
I don't know how long he's been smoking, but, you know, it kind of scares me that I could think that, like, he could be dead before, like, I can't explain it, before he should be.
Uh-huh. Have you ever talked to him about the dangers that he's facing?
No, because whenever he, you know, try to say anything to him, he just goes off on you, you know?
You mean he gets angry?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Kind of corny, but maybe the written way of doing it is better. Maybe that's something that, you know, personalities won't clash that way. He'll have time to sit down and see what's actually going through your head. You know, it's hard because you don't want to hassle the person. You don't want to put all this pressure on them and say, you know, this is what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. You know, you just make the person all tense and defensive all the time. And, you know, that's the last thing you want to do. So if you can figure out a low-key way of approaching it, and perhaps writing a heartfelt letter would do that, or I would say leaving clippings out for him, but that could have the same effect of, you know, just torturing him. You say you don't know how long he's been smoking for?
No, not exactly. It's probably been a while, though.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years.
Do other members of your family smoke?
No, my brother smokes every now and then. He doesn't smoke a lot, though.
Yeah. It's important that, you know, that you do everything you can to try to get through, you know, to both of them, certainly. If your brother's not smoking that much, and perhaps it's not as necessary in his case, but certainly, as far as your father goes, you know, let him know why it is you're telling him this. I think once he understands that, it will become a, you know, less of a battle, and maybe he'll try to do something to, you know, to help himself and thus help the whole family.
Yeah, he's tried to quit once or twice, but
yeah, it's tough. It's really tough to try to quit smoking. That's one thing I've heard from everyone who's tried.
Another amazing thing is if you've ever tried a cigarette in your youth, you know, because all your friends were doing it, that first time that you smoked is a pretty hideous experience. And I don't know why anyone would want to take that second step.
Yeah, I can't understand that.
I think it's because they want to prove that they may have fallen short the first time of being able to execute the smoking of the cigarette with finesse. And it's it may represent to some people entry into adulthood.
Coming of age, you mean?
Yes, and that they can master this task.
Well, I did it with one other person. You know, we snuck out after school one day and smoked a cigarette each in the woods. And we both hated it, and you know, we didn't have to prove anything to anybody else because we both knew that we hated it and we were never going to do it again, and it's held up for quite a few years now. I'm happy with it, you know.
I think also it may have been that you and your friend had independent enough thinking at that age that you realized that you didn't have to be like a lot of other people to...
I think it was just a survival instinct.
Cool.
We dislike gagging.
Yes.
Our guts.
Oh, out. I'm sure. But I mean, and I'm not putting down people who, because of peer pressure, take up smoking. But I'm saying that depending upon the individual and the circumstances in which they are, they may have, you may have developed interests at your age already that were sufficient for you not to feel that you had to legitimize yourself by being part of a certain group of people that
right.
were smoking.
Right. It's a peer pressure. We've talked about that before in this program. It's something that's
a myth.
A real threat to a lot of people. Anyways, sir, we want to wish you all the luck and, you know, keep us updated, if you will, as to, you know, if you make any progress. It would certainly be inspirational to others if you did.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
That's... a story, I guess, is being repeated all over the island, all over the country.
But I think it's heartening, in one sense, that the number of people has grown to such a level who have quit. The large number of people who have quit smoking.
Uh-huh.
I think that there's some encouragement there.
That's true. In fact, I had a number in front of me.
It's a 43 million.
Let's see. Let's see. While more than 50 million Americans continue to smoke, more than 90 million will be smoking were it not for changes in the smoking and health environment that have discouraged smoking since 1964. But there was a number somewhere that said how many people actually quit.
I think it was in the article on the TV program.
Okay, let me look at that then.
I believe.
TV program. Let's see. Yes, 43 million Americans have stopped smoking. That's what it says there. I guess that number sort of is the same as the other number, so it's probably for two reasons. You know, because of all the regulations and also because they've quit on their own. So it's that is an encouraging step. Nick, you look rather thoughtful.
My headphones are breaking up.
Oh.
That's why I'm very thoughtful.
You know, if anyone has any headphones out there that work, please give them to us. We have one pair of headphones here in the studio that have never worked, and I don't know, you know, if there's any others anywhere, but it's impossible trying to hear through them. And the only way Nick can hear what Jim or the callers are saying is through this cruddy pair of headphones, and he has to balance the wire very precariously, and occasionally he gets it just right. Other times it's just, you know, flaking in and out of both ears.
I'm getting very nervous. I need a cigarette.
Well, we don't allow smoking in this studio. No. You know? Other radio stations, they do allow smoking, but we don't. You have to go out in the hallway, and, you know, there was a move at one point to have them go out, you know, into the outside. That was kind of cruel. Still, it was fun to watch, but...
I think there was a proposal to have people go to Setauket when they wanted to smoke, actually.
Oh, no, the people at Setauket would not want that.
No, only kidding, folks.
In Setauket.
No, we're joking. It's a joke.
And they fought the Revolutionary War in Setauket, so I'd be careful. For
I know, I apologize.
Oh, yeah, they had battles right on the Village Green.
I'm impressed. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I know very little about this North Shore history here.
Oh, the revolutionary spies, Setauket spy ring, and we could talk about that for hours.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
There's also a Setauket coffee ring in the Revolutionary War. It was delicious.
Cheese Danish, all those kind of
delightful.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. It's ancestors exist. No, it's not ancestors. It's whatever.
Our forefathers.
Forefathers, yes. Something like that.
Six mothers.
We've got two calls left. Let's get to them. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Okay, we have one call left. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
I would like to talk about a very serious matter.
Okay.
I have a videotape. listen. I don't know if you've been... Just go off the subject for a minute. In the Steinberg, Hedda Nussbaum trial...
Yeah.
...the week that Hedda was in a X-rated movie that was filmed in Long Island, I do have a copy of that. I do have a dub... not only is Hedda Nussbaum in the film, but Brother Nick is seen.
Okay, that's about enough of that. Brother Nick, you have a radio program coming up. You have plenty of time to explain that.
Yes, I've tried to keep that hidden.
Okay. Well, it's kind of regretful that we have to end it on that note, but I guess, you know, these things happen occasionally. I don't know what else to say about it.
Can I spray my mic with Lysol one more time?
Go ahead. Spray the microphone with Lysol. And, you know, we don't even smoke here, but we're keeping the place clean. Oh, wow.
Wow.
what a great feeling.
Was that the Lysol, though?
That, I don't know.
Yes, it was. Oh, but I'm talking in the mic again. I have to spray it again. Whoops.
Oh. Well, when people come in here and wonder why the place stinks of Lysol, now at least they'll know. Jim has been in just about every studio that we have here. Everything has been sprayed. Well, folks, I guess all we can say at this point is if you're thinking of smoking, please don't. Keep your brains alive so you can listen to Brain Damage. And if you are smoking, do what you can, even if it's cutting down, you know, by one cigarette a day, and then two cigarettes a day next week, and three the week after that. It's a start, and you can regain the health that you've lost. And we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear from people that have succeeded and that have made some progress from this day forth. Anyway, we'll be back again next week with Brain Damage from 10 to 12 on Saturday night. Brother Nick is coming in next. Is Brother Bill going to be around?
I have no idea.
No idea.
I never talked to him. I don't know.
It's amazing how brothers are like that.
It is incredible. Totally incredible.
Live in totally different circles and have no idea. You don't sort of feel something in your consciousness, though?
I don't feel it tonight. I don't think he'll be here. I think he's doing extracurricular activity at work.
I see. You're twins, though. I mean, you were born several years apart, but you're...
Don't tell him that.
Oh.
That'll totally blow his cover.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just saying sometimes twins feel...
Twins of different... actually, my parents are brother and sister. His parents are legitimate.
Your parents are brother and sister?
It's an old Mississippi joke.
You can explain that later, too. You have lots of things to talk about in your program tonight. Well, Eric Corley here taking off. Jim Wiener, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
See you again. See you again in 3 weeks.
Righto. My pleasure.
Please don't talk anymore on the microphone. We might have to replace.